TheEnquirer.com, the best in the business, the great Mike Sielski's with us. Hi, Mike.
Morning, guys. How are you?
All right, Mike, this is where we can really understand. I booked you for one thing, and there's a lot of great columns you wrote that I want to get into, too. But could you explain to the city of Philadelphia what is special about Joel Embiid?
Oh, gosh. You know, I think we're seeing a level of dominance in this postseason that I'm not sure any player has approximated in the last 25 years. My colleagues, Dave Murphy and Carla Oval, did a big piece about this. It's on Inquirer.com now, comparing Embiid and what he's done in these, you know, five or six playoff games to what other players have done over the last 30 years. And he's at the top of just about every list. I mean, he's averaging more than a point per minute. You know, he's one of the five best defensive players in the league. I'd argue he's every bit as good as Rudy Gobert, who was the defensive player of the year. You know, you could really argue, Angel, I know you're not going to want to hear this, but, you know, you can point out everything that Sam Hinkie got wrong with the process, but, man, the one thing he got right, he got really freaking right, and that's Embiid.
All right, so we're looking at Iverson in his prime, maybe even Dr. J in his prime. That's what we're seeing right now. 27
yes.
years old. He's at that level, right, Mike?
Absolutely. There's no question about it.
All right, and then here's the thing that I want to add to it. The personality, because he's also got a very welcoming personality for fans. You don't see the package of talent, competitiveness, and fan friendliness. I'm not sure that exists anywhere. Talk a little bit about the bond he has created with the city.
Well, he's a very, very smart person. Okay, this is something that people who have been around him within the Sixers organization since he got there have said that, you know, how intelligent he is. And I think he's very perceptive about how he is looked on in this city and in, you know, the Philadelphia area. I think he's very aware of what fans want. I'm not suggesting he's being phony, but I do think that he plays, you know, it lends itself, his personality lends itself to this city. It's kind of a perfect match that he's willing to kind of play the heel sometimes. Him coming out with Triple H before game one of the Hawks series, all of that stuff. And that is what the NBA is built on, right? Like, I just wrote this in a column for today, that if you look at the recent history of the NBA, there aren't a lot of surprises in terms of who wins the championship or who even makes the NBA finals. It's the Lakers and Celtics in the 80s, and it's the Bulls in the 90s, or it's the Kobe Shaq Lakers. What drives interest in the league is the stars and the personalities and the matchups of those stars and their teams, and Embiid plays right into that. If the Sixers are able to make a deep run this year, if they're able to get by Brooklyn or Milwaukee, get by Atlanta, get to the finals, I think Joel Embiid has a chance to be the face of the league. And if he stays healthy, he can be the face of the league for a while.
And that's why Mike Sielski is better than all of them. Mike, now I want to get to a column you wrote about the philosophy of the NBA and how it is kind of on trial right now. And that is load management and the fact that the damn Nets are out there taking no interest in the regular season. They didn't even care that much about last night's game. All right. Why is it important that that load management get kicked in the teeth because it's not real competition? Talk a little bit about that situation.
Well, as much as the stars, as I just said, as much as stars drive interest in the NBA, the other big factor, of course, and everybody in Philadelphia knows this, is that teams can be stars too, right? Sports is the one place where tribalism, where feeling like you're part of a group and you're all in this together and, you know, you're all Philadelphians or you're all Democrats or Republicans. Like, in sports, that's actually good, kind of, because it builds rivalries, right? Philadelphia hates New York or Boston or Dallas or whatever the case may be. If these stars keep moving around the way that they have, the NBA is going to lose that. And part of that thinking is, well, if I'm a star, I don't have to play every game during the regular season. I'll just play for the postseason, right? Like, that's how we're judging these guys now. It's not, you know, did he play 82 games? Did he bring it every single night like this guy or that guy did so many years ago? It's, okay, well, was he well-rested for the playoffs? That was fine, you know, 7, 8, 9 years ago when Greg Popovich and the Spurs were really the only ones doing it because their three-star players were all in their early to mid-30s. I think it's a little different now that you have teams like the Nets. And if the Nets win the championship, I think you'll look at, you know, the NBA's got a problem because ratings were down terribly during the regular season. And if the Nets win, the message that gets sent is the regular season doesn't matter. If you're good enough, you can kind of sort of throw in the towel for 82 games, get your stars together in the postseason, and win a championship.
Amen. And now I want to take that philosophy and move it over to baseball for a second, Mike, because I got a manager in this town that won't play the best catcher in baseball on the day game after a night game. I'm seeing the same kind of almost, I guess it's analytics-driven, these kind of decisions that are made that lend no urgency to the game at hand. Isn't it also affecting baseball right now?
Well, I think baseball, in terms of viewer interest, has got far bigger problems, honestly, than whether, you know, JT Realmuto plays on a day game after a night game. I mean, that sport, to me, is in a really bad way. I think we've talked about this before, Angelo. I find it very difficult to sit down and watch a full Major League Baseball game anymore. I can't do it. The style of the play is too similar. No more stolen bases, no more balls in play, all the stuff that we've gone over a million times.
Yeah.
Is it a problem in baseball? I suppose it is, right? The problem with baseball is that right now it's built into the structure of the sport that you can only see so much of the star players, right? Like in today's day and age, LeBron James or Steph Curry or Joel Embiid can have the basketball in his hands, you know, 3 out of every 4 times that his team has the ball. In baseball, Mike Trout's only going to come up 3 or 4 or 5 times a game. The rest of the time, you're watching the number 7 hitter, the number 8 hitter. And in today's day and age of fandom, does that sort of approach, does that, you know, do those rules draw and hold fans' interest for the entirety of a game? I'm not sure anymore.
Is it fixable, Mike?
I think you've got to start with shifts. I think you've got to start with putting the shortstop at shortstop and leaving him there and Major League Baseball forcing teams to do that. I think it's going to take a groundswell of change amongst franchises to change their style of play. The problem is they're not incentivized to do it. Our friend Jack McCaffrey, Angelo, made a great point a couple of weeks ago. One of the reasons that baseball was so fun in the 70s and 80s was because of artificial turf. Teams like the Cardinals and the Phillies could hit the ball on the ground and it would go through the infield. And it would lead to singles and doubles and team speed and all of that stuff. And you don't have that anymore because artificial turf is gone. And it's one of many factors, I think, that's made baseball really hard to watch.
It's a great way to look at it. All right, let me get to you have done amazing job over the last 15 months. There was even a period where Mike Sielski moved over the news to chronicle the pandemic. Mike, you wrote a recent column saying, I guess, that you are really hoping for the end of the Zoom news conference and Zoom interviews. How important is it for you to do your job and for us to get the information we want for them to allow you back with the players?
I think it's really important. Take us out of it. And it's funny, Angelo, I got into a bit of a Twitter troll row with people because I stood up for Jeff McClain and his asking Jeff Stoutland about the Carson Wentz situation. That's the kind of thing that used to be that, you know, Jeff McClain could sidle up to Jeff Stoutland at training camp and ask him about that. But now, because of the Zoom era, it's asked out in front of everybody and fans get their, you know, get in an uproar over it. I think it's incumbent on the leagues themselves for their own benefit to open that access back up again. People are hungry for sports content and sports coverage. And personally, for instance, I felt like the 2020 NFL season came out of nowhere last year, that all of a sudden the Eagles were playing Washington one Sunday in September because there had been no run-up to it. There had been no preseason and no daily coverage of training camp. And these teams in these leagues, to me, cannot produce enough content and stories and video and all of that stuff that people want themselves. It is to their benefit to allow us access. Because we, as much as we might write and say things that they don't want to hear or that they don't want revealed, we tell a lot of interesting stories, too. We get people interested. It's a byproduct of what we do. And I think if they don't go back to that, and the NFL has already said they're not going to this season, I think they're cutting off their noses despite their faith.
Well, Mike, this is the thing. I had the same reaction you did to Jeff McClain, and I took a lot of heat for saying that it was another terrific piece of reporting by Jeff. And you know what I came out of it with? There's less of an appreciation now for sports journalism than I can ever remember. People don't want real reporting anymore. A lot of people rebel against it. They only want what they want to hear. Are you getting that sense?
Yeah, and I think it's true across society. I don't think it's true just in sports. I think it's true in politics and social issues. You know, the kind of person who watches Fox News is not the kind of person who watches MSNBC, who is not the kind of person who watches CNN. I think to bring it back to sports, I think, you know, we've become siloed, we've become tribal, and there are a lot of people out there who just want to be told that it doesn't matter that Ben Simmons can't shoot free throws, and we, you know, the Eagles are moving on from Carson Wentz, and they don't care to know, you know, or so they say, why that relationship between him and the organization fell apart. They don't want to hear honest, sometimes uncomplimentary reporting about their teams. I just think that that's the way we are in society now. I don't like it. I can speak for myself. I'm not that way. I want an honest, unvarnished opinion. I want honest reporting with intellectual integrity. But, you know, here we are.
Yeah, Mike, tremendous stuff. You shouldn't change. Jeff shouldn't change. The pendulum's bound to, you know, turn back at some point. Mike, great stuff. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Angelo.
Mike Sielski.